If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Phil Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we'll conclude our mini-series of interviews with riders from the Rainer Foundation's sensational class of 2022. Oliver Knight finished last season by riding 8 professional races as a stagiaire for Tadej Pogacar's UAE Team Emirates squad. Having won the Volta Castello for Aix-en-Provence, the French amateur team with whom he will complete his under-23 career this season. Ollie has grit to match his talent. After crashing and fracturing his pelvis on the final stage of last year's Vuelta a Burgos, he returned to action just over a month later for a hectic period that saw him start 7 professional races in just 4 weeks. His modest demeanour belies an unshakable determination to achieve his lifelong goal of becoming a professional cyclist. In truth, he has lived and raced like a professional since competing as a junior with the now-defunct HMT Hospital squad. 2023 will be a critical year for Ollie as he bids to make good on his long-running apprenticeship with Aix-en-Provence. Continued support from the Rainer Foundation, a charity funding young British riders to race abroad, will give him the very best opportunity of doing so. The Rainer Foundation is widely respected for helping scores of young British riders to become professional cyclists, and nowhere more than at Brother Cycling. In 2018, Phil Jones, Brother UK's managing director and this podcast co-host, raised around £20,000 for the foundation by riding the entire route of the Tour of Britain one day ahead of the race. Ollie, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Yeah, no worries.
Well, we first met at the Rainer Foundation dinner last November. How was that for you? It was a brilliant evening as a spectator, so to speak, but you were right at the heart of things.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was good to catch up with everyone after a long season. Obviously, you cross paths with a lot of the guys throughout the year, but nice to have everyone in one place in a far more relaxed environment.
I think we kind of assume, probably incorrectly, that you guys see each other week in, week out, but it is a fairly dispersed group, isn't it? There are Rainer-funded riders across Europe.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you got guys in Belgium, France, Spain, and I think there's like one or two that you see more often than others, but the rest of the guys, yeah, it's you don't see them a lot.
How was Christmas? I mean, it seems a long time ago now, but did you get a proper break?
Got a decent break, but yeah, still having to put the miles in there. Yeah, fair bit of training over Christmas. Luckily, I got away to a training camp in December for a week, so nice to have a little bit of decent weather, but then, yeah, straight back to the snow and ice.
And I think, as we speak, you've only been back in Aix for a couple of hours. Is that correct?
Pretty much, yeah. Straight back and went to see the team today and, yeah, sorting out the bike and everything. And, yeah, it's nice. It's like you go away for a couple of months and straight back and it feels like you've never left, really.
How is the weather in Aix today? Is it a location that you need to escape from to Calpe during the winter months, or do you get, you know, year-round warm weather training down there?
I have to say, I think this is my 4th year this year. It doesn't really bother. I think this year was a bit different. It was pushing it. The weather wasn't ideal in the UK, but I don't mind spending that 2-3 months in the UK over winter, because I know as soon as I'm here, it's just like summer all year.
Well, let's rewind and go right back to the beginning. You're from a cycling family, aren't you? I mean, it's funny. Over Christmas, I ran into a guy called Simon House, who manages one of our sponsored teams. And I mentioned, you know, I've been to the Rainer dinner, interviewed a lot of gifted young riders and mentioned your name. And he said, wow, I used to race with his dad. So clearly it's in the blood.
Yeah, no, it is. I think that's the reason I got into the sport, is from my dad watching him race. I never really had to think about it. I played football when I was younger, but packed that in at, I think, 14. And then, yeah, from there, it's been just racing, really.
What's your dad's name?
Ian Knight.
Which team did Ian ride for?
Crikey. So he raced for a few back in the 90s, But then more recently, he raced for Corley Cycles when he came back to race in 2009. That's who I saw him racing for. And then it was quite weird. That's actually a team that I ended up joining when I was 14, I believe. That's who linked me with the coach that I'm working with now, Roy Chamberlain. That's sort of how things have panned out. It's quite weird.
Was your dad a first cat or an elite? I mean, how did his career pan out?
Yeah, an elite. When he was younger, he raced in France for a bit and in Italy, did a few races in Italy, lived there for a bit, came back, raced in the UK as an elite. And then when he came back in 2009, he was an elite as well for a few years, doing the NatBees and the odd Premier Calendar.
Well, your dad must be really well placed to give you a perspective on, you know, the changing opportunities for young British riders. We'll probably talk later, you know, about this myriad of pathways that somebody from your generation, you know, can choose from, whether that be pathway that you're on with a French amateur team or the Olympic Academy or, you know, World Tour Teams Development Squad, anything like that. Of course, none of those options would have been available to your dad.
No, exactly. I think there's certainly a lot more ways to become a professional cyclist now than what there were back then. So it's just nice that I can profit from that.
Does he ever talk about that? Does he ever pull your leg so you've got it easy?
Not too much, to be fair. I think he's happy with the way that I'm doing it, coming out to France racing these amateur races where you learn quite a lot, I think.
Was your dad your primary inspiration when you grew up?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. Going and watching his races, that being the first sort of thing I saw of bike racing, I think that was always going to be something that those sort of races in the UK were the ones that I initially thought, oh, this is what I want to be doing. And then from there, obviously, you grow up and you learn what your end goal is. And that's certainly something that someone that I looked up to.
I mean, your generation, I guess, would have been the first to, you know, to come up in a period in which British riders were household names, you know, Wiggins, Cavendish, all the hype around the 2012 Olympic Games in London. Do you remember that period? And did it have a particular influence on your career?
I do, yeah. I can remember quite well. Obviously, I was only 11, but that's sort of the age where you're the most influenced, I think. Bradley Wiggins wins the Tour de France, and then obviously the Olympics as well, and then seeing quite a lot of people get into the sport from that, because I was doing cycling before then, but then also seeing that, and there was a mate from school actually who started cycling, and the number of people that were into it certainly went up, and yeah, it really did spark a lot of guys coming into the sport. And I think you can see that now. It's like the good British guys now are all at that age that were most influenced by that sort of period.
I'm trying to remember, you know, when I was that age a long time ago. But, you know, being a cyclist was to plough a lonely furrow, to put it mildly. It must have been amazing to go to school and find that, you know, cycling was cool.
I wouldn't go that far, but people knew about it at least.
I mean, continuing that context of 2012, the track riders were as revered as the road riders, weren't they? If not more so, they were big stars. Was the track ever on your radar, or were you a roadie from the get-go?
Pure roadman, really. Me, to be fair, I thought about the track when I was a bit younger, but because we live based in Bedford, so not too close to a track, it's always going to be just over an hour. So it was never super easy to get there. So I think the road for me was always something that it was going to be what I enjoyed the most. So I can remember cyclocross being quite popular with the guys I grew up racing with, but I did not even a full season of that and realised that, yeah, I preferred riding my bike, not cleaning it.
Too much mud.
Exactly, too much mud. Too cold, too much mud.
Who was your club growing up? You're in the Milton Keynes area, I think.
So that was Team MK. So Team Milton Keynes, raced with them from when I started, basically. I can't remember how old I was, probably 10 or 11. And then moved on to Corley's when I was, 14 until second year junior.
Was Corley Cycles your primary outlet for racing, perhaps more so than the club?
Yeah, I'd say so. When I think back to races when I was younger, I always think of being in Corley's. Before that, at Team Milton Keynes, I can also remember going down there for their Saturday training sessions, which were always good fun, doing like track stand competitions and stuff like that, learning how to sort of ride no-handed, that sort of thing.
And was Bob Varney involved in those days, the owner of Drops, or Life Plus Wahoo, I should say?
He was involved a bit before me, he was involved when Ian Stannard came through, because he's from sort of Milton Keynes way. He rode for Team Milton Keynes as well.
And did Ian ever make any guest appearances?
He did. Unfortunately, I missed it. I think just before I was like really into it, he came and did like a day with the club, which is on YouTube somewhere. But I think he was sort of like the local guy that was like out there doing what everyone was dreaming of doing. So for sure, he was a big influence as well.
I can't imagine what that must be like for a young rider. I know Alex Dowsett, you know, used to turn up at his Club 10 in full movie star team kit, which must have been mind-blowing, you know, for all the kids there. Were you ever coached by your dad, or did he allow you to do things your own way?
I think me and my dad had a few fallouts early on with going on rides and stupid things like if I didn't know where I was and I was suffering, and he'd, yeah... Because it's so hard. It's such a hard sport, and I think more mentally than anything. And yeah, he'd certainly push me past my comfort zone a few times. But then you needed that. And then luckily, well, I ended up having my own coach from about 13, 14 years old. That's Roy Chamberlain, who I'm still coached by now.
Can you quantify the effect that's had on your career? I mean, the value of consistency must be immense.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to have someone that knows what works with you and try new things, but also know what works well and things that we can look back on that have worked in the past, just to know the right process, but also try new things as well that might work.
I mean, cycling has become a very data-oriented sport, hasn't it? What with Training Peaks and all the rest of it. Is that the relationship that you guys have, or is it more focused on experience, feel, how you've performed, you know, previously at certain races, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, to be fair, I think, which I think that's the most important thing. Obviously, the numbers is super important, and it's good to know the reason why you're doing things, but also good communication as well. And like how things are going, like mentally, is also really important. But he does a lot of research and looks into new sessions, which is really good.
And it's that total commitment, isn't it? That all-consuming approach that separates a rider who wants to be a professional cyclist from a weekend racer. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that's it. I think it's one of them sports that you're never not training, really. I think if you're off the bike, you're resting for the next session, and if you're on the bike, you're putting in the work for the races to come. But yeah, that's why I love it, really.
You know, one of the things you mentioned when we chatted in Leeds, and what really struck home with me was your ambition to be a professional cyclist. It wasn't to win the Tour de France, for example. And I think people who know the sport from the inside, that phrase, a professional, really resonates.
That has been the thing that I've been aspiring to. Yeah, I didn't really see myself dreaming of winning the Tour or like winning these big races. I think I just really wanted to be a professional cyclist. Obviously, winning the races is like the best part of it, and that's what I'm thinking of when I'm out training. But at the same time, it's like being a professional and having your hobby essentially as your job. Yeah, that's the goal.
HMT was a big step, I think would be fair to say, for you, and an early step. And continuing our theme of professionalism, that was very much the modus operandi, wasn't it?
As junior teams go, I think it doesn't get much better than HMT. I was lucky enough to do a few races as a first year, guesting for them. And then I was on the team as a second year in 2019. And yeah, just really having a good taste of all these different sort of races, different types of races in Europe from such a young age, and having a really high level of support was brilliant. But I think the main thing that I think I gained from it was the fact that Mark Barry and Tony Barrett, who run it, they both made it very clear that you don't get much more support than what we're giving you now, even as a pro. So don't think as you get older and you go on to your next step, which for me was going out to France as an amateur with Aix, don't think you're going to get the same support as what you're getting here, which is very true. I think even now, having raced with UAE, it's not like a massive difference between the support we're getting on HMT as what the pros get.
Wow. I mean, that is a huge compliment. Had the team evolved even from 2018 when you guested to 2019 when you became a fully fledged member of the squad.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think in 2018, it was a bit of a strange year because there wasn't really a set squad. It was mainly they had a few races they were doing throughout the year, and they took sort of like a handful of different riders throughout. For me, I was lucky enough to do three races, I believe, Ac Van Bladel, Basque Country, and Philippe Gilbert Classic. But then as a second year, being on like the full, like a proper team setup, the support was brilliant.
And was it a mixed program of domestic and European racing, or was it solely European?
Yeah, so there was quite a lot in the UK. So we did Tour of Wales, which we had full support for, and then a few of the other national series. But I think the main focus was on those European races where I think you learn the most. Yeah, the races are a little bit longer, and they're also far more similar to the professional ones.
And can you quantify the impact that that had on you, you know, to be on European roads?
Well, you are basically doing what you're watching on TV, going up these decent climbs like in the Basque Country. Yeah, with like motorbikes, the cars and everything. It's, you just don't get that in the UK.
And to go into fine detail, did racing on that bigger terrain crystallise your ambition to become a professional rider? I spoke to Oscar Onley before Christmas, and he told me, you know, I had an inkling I was going to be a climber, but it wasn't until I raced on the larger climbs in Europe that I realised, you know, I could really do that. Did the geography have an impact on your career too?
I think it definitely made you more aware of what you were good at and what you needed to work on. For me, I learned that, well, it sort of clarified what I had an inkling of in the UK, which was that I wasn't really a fan of steep climbs. I'm still not a fan of steep climbs. It made me really like those long, draggy climbs, like 5%, that we don't really have in the UK.
And by taking on a European programme, did you feel that you'd put yourself on a different pathway from your teammates at Cawley Cycles, for example, even at that very early stage?
With Cawley's, we were lucky enough that we got to go over to Belgium a few times, but you never really do those like Southern Europe races unless you're on a team like HMT that get invited to them. That's what really made me know that that's for sure what I wanted to be doing. There's no better place really than Aix to be on a French amateur team where the roads are real nice and it's sun shining, and it reminds me of those races that are doing as a junior in like the Basque Country and that.
So how did Aix come onto your radar, Ollie?
So that was through Harrison Wood. He was on the team in 2019, so when he was first year under 23. And yeah, he sort of put me in contact with them. Yeah, he sort of connected the dots, really.
Did it feel like a big step?
It did feel like a big step. 18 years old when I first moved out here, and Dad dropped me off, and it suddenly feels like you're a long way from home, but you learn so quickly. Things that normal people never really have to think about, but yeah, it's what I want to be doing, so it's brilliant.
How was your French at that point?
Awful. I did it at GCSE, but not amazing. In fact, I did Spanish at A level because I sort of thought I might end up in Spain. But yeah, the French was not ideal at that point. But yeah, I picked it up quite quick, luckily. So.
And what was your domestic setup when you arrived in Aix? What type of accommodation had you found?
I have to say I'm quite lucky. It's not too bad at all. I got put with the host family right from the start, which is the same house I'm in now, the same family I'm with. Yeah, it's really good. We've got a pool, my own space, and yeah, it's really nice. I'm certainly one of the lucky Rainer guys for sure.
Shouldn't you be sleeping on the floor of a barn somewhere or a ruined farmhouse or something?
It's far from that, yeah.
I'm trying to picture the scene here, Ollie. Your dad's dropped you off. He's jumped back in the car. He's heading back to the UK. And there you are in a small French town. I mean, did you think, my goodness, you know, what have I done? Or did you think, right, this is it. Day one, it's down to me now to become a pro rider.
Yeah, that's it. I think, yeah, from the moment I did like my first ride, it sort of felt like just like a never-ended training camp, really, for the first couple of months or so. But then you fit in a bit more and you learn, you meet friends within the team and go out in the town and that and try and become more French in a sense. And then it feels like a lot more homely. But at the same time, the only reason you're here is to move on to the next step.
Were you kept busy from the get-go with training and racing, or did you have time to acclimatise?
I didn't actually get raced too much at the start. It was tricky mentally because I really wanted to race, and the races they were putting me in were quite small. But at the same time, like looking back, I did learn quite a lot from that. And it meant that I was really keen and ready to race those bigger races when they did come around.
I mean, what type of lessons did you learn there? The fundamentals of bunch positioning, or was it more tactical and strategic? What are the big differences between a French style of racing and the races that you'd previously experienced?
As you say, the French races, the French amateur races, they are quite different. You've got like there's a bunch of guys that are all sort of rivals in a way, and you know what guys you're looking for each week, learning how those guys race and also like how the parkours can suit you and the general French way of racing and when people are likely to attack, when moves are likely to go. I think last year was the year that I actually learned the most because I was further towards the front and not suffering quite as much as those first couple of years. And I'll probably learn even more this year, hopefully. But it is a different style of racing and different to as a junior, even in Europe.
I mean, you raced the junior tour of the Basque Country with HMT. How did the French calendar compare to that?
It's similar, but at the same time, it's different. I suppose that doesn't really say anything. But yeah, I'd say it is pretty similar. Very aggressive racing. That's what I love. It's like constant moves going off and no real structure to it, which is different to when we go and race in Spain, for example, where the teams, they work together and try and control the race, which I don't really like too much because it makes it a bit too predictable.
You mentioned a moment ago that you're starting to move to the front of the peloton, and very modestly, you didn't mention your victory at the Volta Castello. How significant was that?
Yeah, that was pretty... I won a stage of Volta Navarre from quite a long attack, and that's when I sort of come into quite a nice block of form. I had so much confidence from then that I was just so keen to try and win races. And then I won, I think it was the second or the third stage of Castello, went into yellow, and then the guys rode for me really well on the last day and basically dropped me off on the last climb with 20K to go. And I just had to stay with the fast guys over that. And if I could come over the top, then I'd won the general, which I did. And then I think that's what put me more on the radar of the big teams, which gave me my role as a stagiaire.
What about the burden of leadership? Does it sometimes require a degree of courage to put your hand up at a pre-race briefing and say, look, I'm feeling good here, I've got good legs and I need you guys to ride for me? Is that something that comes naturally to you?
Yeah, I'd say I quite like it. If I'm aggressive enough in the race and I've got confidence that the guys, they'll do what they can to help. But at the same time, I really like helping other guys. So they know that if they do something for me, then if they're on a good day, I'll do something for them. I have to say the last day of Castello when I was actually in the jersey, it was a bit stressful at times. We let a break go perhaps a bit too far. The DS said that there was no one dangerous, but I knew full well there was a guy on 7 seconds in the move. So I was trying to tell them we need to bring this back. But yeah, it was just quite a lot going wrong. But yeah, we pulled it off in the end.
And what are the benefits of long-term relationships in that scenario? You mentioned that you'd ridden for other guys on the team in the past, and they, in a sense, I guess, knew that they had relied on you, and now was the time to return the favour. Would that be fair?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's a team. It is a team sport. I know you only win as individuals, but you're all there to win the race. It doesn't matter who wins it.
Is it a group of guys that you've been riding with for some time now?
Pretty much. There's some guys that have been here, I think, almost every year that I've been here. So I know those really well and obviously really bonded with them over the years. But it's also nice with like new guys coming in and guys that live close that you spend a lot of time with training. You all get on really well with each other.
It must be an amazing feeling on a Monday morning, having won the GC on the Sunday afternoon, to be out on the roads of Aix, turning your legs with your teammates.
Yeah, that's it. One guy who helped me in particular on the stage that I won, my Canadian mate, Jeremy, went out for a spin with him the next day and to the cafe. I treated him to a coffee and a cake, just about repaid him.
Can you put into words that sensation of crossing the line with your hands in the air or standing on the final podium as a GC winner? It's been an incredible sensation.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's strange, really, because it's like, it's everything that you're working towards. And it only really lasts for a split second, that like little bit of real happiness. But even though like you spend so much time working towards it, I think it is like worth it.
Yeah, and so much time suffering. Did you ever consider other pathways other than moving out to France, or did that feel like the right thing given the pathway that had led you from HMT to AX?
I didn't really consider anything else. I think because I didn't do the track, there was no way getting into sort of that British cycling bubble. So for me, like, it was almost the only way. You could say you could go race domestically and try work up through the British teams and then do the odd European race with those Conti British teams. But I think for me, my style of racing, I always saw myself moving out to Europe and doing these like punchy races with a few more climbs.
At its best, I don't think, you know, there's much that can match the Lincoln Grand Prix or the Cycle Classic or whatever it might be. It seems though that the pathway you've chosen is a much more secure route.
It seems from the outside that there's more riders that have gone through that European route and then gone on to the pro teams, that it gives you a bit more confidence. But at the same time, you can't discount how good British racing can be. I did the national champs year before last at Lincoln. So fun. But it's almost as though it's not respected enough from the pro teams. It's not because the races aren't hard enough, but for some reason, the pro teams, they just sort of, they see these European races as more important.
Is that closely related to UCI status and points and all that kind of thing? Or is it more of a cultural thing in your opinion?
Potentially, but I think probably more of a cultural thing. I think even now that cycling is really, you can literally just look at your numbers and see if you've got the level. I think even still the being able to race well on the European roads is still really quite valuable.
Just while we're discussing alternative pathways, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you thought you might end up in Spain rather than France. What option did you have to race in Spain?
I think because I did quite well in the Basque Country, also won a stage of Vuelta Pamplona, I tend to go quite well in Spain. So I thought maybe basing myself out there would be a good option, but there wasn't really a team that really appealed to me in the under 23. So Aix for me was where I would rather be, because we race in Spain as well. So it's quite, get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. And the French scene is very deep, I think, if that's the right phrase. Lots of races all in various tiers. Does the French system seem more developed than the Spanish?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think because there's just so many races, it's not just for under 23s. Whereas I think when we go out to Spain, it feels like very under 23 base. Whereas here you've got some older guys that they've made a career out of French amateur racing. It's tricky to explain, but
how valuable is the support of teams like FDJ and the French World Tour teams for the French scene, that you could go and do a Coupe de France race and you know that Groupama FDJ are going to be there, for example? Does that lend a certain prestige to the scene?
The French teams, they really know the level of these French amateur races so well that if you are doing well in France as an amateur, you can be confident that those French teams, they are watching and they'll know who you are.
I mean, I guess Harrison Wood is the living proof. You know, he went from Aix-en-Provence to Cofidis, but your stagiaire opportunity came with UAE Team Emirates.
Yeah, so that came about through one of the coaches. Well, he's no longer a coach at Aix, but he was a coach at Aix. He knew Machin quite well. Yeah, they'd be in contact. He knows the Spanish races really well. Of course, I won the Castello and the Stage of Navarre and also had a few decent results in France. So that's what I think helped me there.
Can you remember your initial reaction? Did it feel like a gateway to the big time? Or did you think, well, here's where the hard work really begins?
I didn't really want to believe it until the contract was signed and everything. And even up until like the very last deadline for the UCI of sorting out all the paperwork, I still wasn't 100% sure that it was going to go through. And then as soon as I got it, I was just so motivated to work even harder. And of course, my first race, so much learning there and just learning how things work within the team, but then also within the race and how it's raced. Because of course, you see it on TV, but you never really know what it's like until you're there pedaling. And then to go and break the pelvis on the last day is not the best of luck, but is what it is.
We're talking about the Vuelta a Burgos here, which is pretty much the warm-up race of choice for riders about to start the Vuelta a España. I mean, give us a sense of the quality of the field. Who did you find yourself racing alongside?
Well, Valverde, Nibali, the guys that I've been watching on TV for as long as I can remember, really. So crazy. Guys that have, now that they've retired, it's like, I think in years to come, I'll really appreciate that I got to line up against them.
And what was your role in UAE? I think Almeida was leading the team.
We didn't go into the race with like a distinct leader, but of course, him being there and going on to do the Vuelta, he was always going to be the one with eyes on him. And he did win the last stage, which was brilliant. But yeah, it was nice that, well, the lineup was so good. We had Rui Costa, Trentin, and then of course Almeida as well, Gaviria for the sprints. Not too much stress because the guys were so strong that you weren't worried that they wouldn't be able to finish the job.
Was it a daunting experience or were you made to feel welcome?
I was made to feel really welcome. The guys were so nice. They were just like super friendly. Made me feel comfortable right from the start, which is brilliant.
How different was it from anything that you'd experienced before? Was it the same but different, you know, a bike race but with greater support, or was it an entirely different experience?
I'd say it's not massively different to what we have at Aix. Obviously, the support is like, you can't really compare them because it's as good as it gets, really. You're not thinking of, you're doing the pedaling on the bike, but other than that, there's nothing that you're really doing. So you've got the 100% support, but at the end of the day, it's still the same. You're still working towards the same goal, which is winning a bike race.
And how many of those lessons that you'd learned off the bike were transferable? You know, as a journalist, you go to a pro bike race and you realize quickly that all of those post-race routines serve a purpose. You know, your recovery begins from the minute you step off the bike. How many of those rituals had you already learned from your time at Aix and even from HMT?
Yeah, it just sort of proved that everything that I'd learned with Aix and HMT is true, really. It's the same principles at the end of the day. You're just doing as little as you can off the bike so you can do as much as you can on the bike.
You broke your pelvis on the final stage of the Vuelta a Burgos. How did that affect your morale? Did you think, oh no, my chance is slipping away here? Or were you just completely resolved to get back on the bike as quickly as you could?
I think for a brief moment in the hospital, as soon as it happened, I was just a bit broken, really. But then the doctor sort of said how long it might be until I can be back on the bike, which was only 2 weeks. And I thought, even if I'm only able to do easy rides for a week, as soon as I'm back on the bike, I'm only going to be getting better, really. So I was focused on just doing everything I can to speed up the recovery as much as I could. So eating as much protein as possible, doing all the tips that UAE were giving me so that as soon as I could be back racing again.
You had a couple of DNFs at the two Italian races. Was that related to your recovery, or was that related to racing at a professional level for the first time, effectively?
Yeah, I think those races are super tough. You don't get many finishes anyway, but I think with the lack of racing and the lack of fitness going into them, they're never going to be easy. But I still learned quite a lot from those races, which was the main thing. I think I did what I could to help the team, and they were always really positive. It is what it is. It wasn't ideal for the back end of the season, having almost a month off of training and racing, but I still took a lot from it.
You finished your final four races, including Paris-Tours, which is, you know, one of the most respected French classics. How did you feel at the end? Did you think you'd done enough to earn a contract?
Bah, I don't know. It's tricky because contracts, they're not easy to get. Obviously, that's the dream, but I knew that because I didn't have anywhere near as much fitness as what I could have done, then yeah, I don't think I can reflect too much on it. I did the best I could, and I'm lucky enough that I've got this year as well to go and prove that I'm worthy of a spot on a team somewhere.
Is the door still open at UAE Team Emirates? Are you still in contact?
There's a little bit, but not much. Obviously, there's other teams. It's not just those. And yeah, I mean, there's so many teams out there that, yeah, it only takes one of them.
You're still out there in France, you're still pitching, and you still have the support of the Reina Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about how valuable their support has been?
Simply would not be possible without them, to be fair. I know that's what everyone's going to say, but it is really true. They help you financially, but then also being part of this sort of community of guys all in the same boat. There's always going to be someone to chat with, bond with over the situation that you're all in.
And what are your short-term goals, Ollie, as you move into your final year as an under-23?
Honestly, I just really want to enjoy these races. Some of these races I've been able to do three times now, so I know roughly what they'll end up like. There's certain goals. There's good weekend, end of March, with Grand Prix Saint-Étienne and Annemasse-Bellegarde. Those two, that's sort of like the big opening weekend in France, really. Be nice to get a result there. But then even sooner than that, there's Grand Prix d'Aix, which is middle of February, which is a French Cup this year. So that'll be really nice to get a real good result on home roads, in a way.
And will we see you on UK roads at any point? Will you be back for the Nationals, for example?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Hopefully the National Champs. Don't know where it is yet. Maybe a couple of other races if I come back. We'll have to see. Try and fit it in.
Well, Ollie, thanks very much indeed for your time today. It's very much appreciated. I hope 2023 brings you everything you need, including that pro contract.
Cheers. Yeah, thank you.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.